Blog Talk Radio.
Our intro, no intro music this week because, sadly, the Dolphins season has ended. They played a heck of a season, 10-6, got into the playoffs, and the Pittsburgh Steelers, who was peaking beyond control right now, they really landed, handed the smackdown, you know, physically and literally handed the smackdown to the Dolphins and Matt Moore on Sunday. Matt Moore proves he's just a career backup. You know, although I like him, I love his mentality. I like him to come off the bench, come off firing, have the confidence, be able to get that done. But we need a little bit more than Matt Moore. We needed more on this past Sunday. We had some few other games that happened. Mr. Cleveland, you with me today?
I'm here, play boy. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, man. Thanks for asking. We had a wild card weekend. We get four more games coming up this weekend, so it should give for another fun, exciting weekend for NFL fans. Obviously, we had the Texans introduce the playoffs to everybody by beating up on the wounded Raiders, in which, you know, the Raiders were wounded and Carr wasn't there, and the Raiders just didn't show up. Is that how you saw that game as well?
Well, what I saw is that it was a little bit of a decision for Jack Del Rio to make with regards to, did he want to come back with McGloin or did he want to stay with Connor Cook? Ironically, I watched a NFL Live interview with Teddy Bruschi, and he pretty much nailed it as far as what's going to happen. He was basically saying that, like, hey, it's okay to play a rookie during the regular season because they have time to make adjustments on the fly, and you have another game or two to do things. When you just have one game that's win or lose, win or you're out, those adjustments are much more difficult to make, and they come a lot faster, and so you just can't do that. So when they went to halftime and he was like, I'm not sure whether or not to go with the other guy, given his health situation, it made things pretty difficult. And Jadeveon Clowney is starting to come around. He's starting to look like that guy that was out there at South Carolina making big plays. And so they just didn't really have a lot to go with. Latavius Murray was still running the ball fairly effectively. They did lose an offensive lineman during that game. And, it was a little bit tough for him, and unfortunately, you know, not having Mr. Carr was a death sentence for him.
Yeah, it was. I think we all saw that train coming for the Raiders, and injuries happen to everybody, so it's unfortunate. Hopefully, Carr can get back and they can get right for next season. The afternoon game for Saturday was Detroit traveling up to the Northwest to play the Seattle Seahawks. And they actually gave them a pretty good fight for the most part. You know, a couple of things going through. Stafford is able to make a play, capitalize on a few third downs out of them. That game changed the entire complexion. But Seattle in their run game was an impressive thing. I don't know if even there's Seahawks fan, there's still 12 of their expected Ross to produce like that, as he had a record-breaking performance there. What do you think? What's your outlook on that game, the Seahawks and the Lions, the Seahawks squeaking by the Detroit Lions?
Well, I certainly thought that it would be a little bit more of a passing offense that would lead to the victory, and the fact that you're referring to it as a squeaking by the Detroit Lions is a little bit disrespectful, considering that the Detroit Lions only scored two 50-yard field goals, never got past the 30-yard line, never got into the red zone, not one time in the game. And also, Paul Richardson made his presence felt with a plethora of incredible catches, one-handed, just incredible Odell Beckham style catches.
It was
Doug Baldwin did his thing, and the defense did not allow the best white running back in the league to get more than 60 yards. So I think it was a little bit more than squeaking by. They beat them by 20 points. So, I mean, I'm not quite sure where the squeak by comes in.
The best white running back in the league.
The best white running back in the league. Or let's say, quite possibly the best running back in the league.
Okay.
Quite possibly.
Okay.
Considerably only one. But I mean, you know, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He has a 50-50 shot at being that anyway. Okay. That's actually what I'm. Okay. Well, I mean, Matthew Stafford was off his game, obviously. You know, the finger, the index finger, and the tip of the finger being numb, and the BS glove that he had was really a finger stint. It just, you know, it impacted his game. He was high, he was short, he was off, he was wide. You know, but give the Seattle Seahawks credit for taking advantage and getting that W on Saturday. And we'll see. They have a tough game coming up this week as they go to Atlanta Falcons and they get to mix it up with their old coach and Dan Quinn, and you know how quickly has he turned the Atlanta Falcons around, because last year they stunk, and then this year they have arguably MVP quarterback and two-headed monster in the backfield, and they have their draft pick from a few years ago can now get after the passer. You know, what's Russell not getting a whole lot of sleep this week, huh?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, we are scared to death. I mean, once again, not to be a dead horse, but Earl Thomas is not lining up at free safety, and that makes a considerable difference. They barely beat the Falcons the last time with him in the game, so to say that going down to Atlanta and winning is just going to be a piece of cake would be completely false. I know that Matt Ryan is 1-4 in his playoff games and is not getting a lot of confidence around the country as far as what he's able to do. But at the same time, they have a lot of weapons, and it's going to take a very good game plan and almost perfect execution to come out of Atlanta with a victory. That being said, this team is certainly capable of doing that. Whether they will show up with a team that is Super Bowl caliber adverse, a team that has gotten blown out by Green Bay and, you know, dropped a pretty easy game against the Cardinals 3 weeks ago, that remains to be seen. Been playing their best game. They have a very good chance, but at the same time, they're going to have to slow down a very potent offense, and so I'm not 100% sold on it, but at the same time, I am a 12, so I have to lean that direction.
Okay, well, a little truth and objectivity came out there for a second until he clarified it and snapped back and realized who he was. He got to straighten it back up. Okay. Well, we'll talk about who I got for that game, but to recap last week, we had the Dolphins obviously going to the Pittsburgh and getting walloped up there in the Steel City. And then we had the Giants traveling to Green Bay, and they couldn't get past the Colts. You know, they, for the first, I think the first 20, 25 minutes of the game, quarter and a half, they were trying to figure out what coats to wear on the sideline, which should they not wear on the field, which hats to wear. They just couldn't get comfortable. So, meanwhile, Aaron Rodgers is just on fire right now. He's in fuego. So, you want to comment on either one of those games?
Well, sure. I mean, coming out of the Giants game, I definitely gained a little bit more respect for Eli. Not always my favorite guy, but basically, he didn't call out Odell Beckham Jr. He didn't call out all those receivers for kicking it in Miami on a yacht with Trey Song, looking like a big Pippin video. He just simply said, if you do all that, you have to back it up. That's all that he said. He didn't say, hey, these guys shouldn't have dropped a bunch of passes. He said, hey, We had a great week of practice. I don't think that that little excursion down to Miami had any effect on the game. However, when you do something like that and you don't produce, this is what will happen to you. So I thought that he handled it very professionally. He didn't blame anybody. He didn't throw anybody under the bus. He didn't say anybody should play better. He just said, hey, man, if that's what's up and that's who you guys are, you know, if Michael Irvin is your idol, hey, man, Michael Irvin never dropped a touchdown. Odell Beckham dropped four passes. And that that kickoff that I don't remember the dude's name, but he caught on the 2-yard line and then kind of fell out of bounds like he couldn't hold his balance. It's like, why didn't he get the ball?
Right.
He was on the 40-yard line. I mean, that's basically the difference in the game for me. I know there are a lot of other factors that happened, but that play was just, come on. That's not NFL professional football. You just don't do that in a playoff.
Well, yeah, I think here's the good thing and the bad thing about the quote unquote players coach is once things start to get off rails a little bit, if you don't have the strong personality in the locker room to kind of curtail some things and be an advocate for you, that's when things can really go awry. And that appears to be what happened in New York. Because Eli, you know, Eli Manning, he's going to kind of hit you with the, you know, the sly comment in the backhand. He's not going to come out front and tell you, hey, don't do that, don't do this, or act, this is how you go about your business. There's nobody on the team to do that. And the coach doesn't either. The coach is like, okay, guys, do what you want. Just be here on Sunday and give it your best shot. Well, that works for a veteran team. Most of this team, the stars on the team, i.e. number 13 in blue, is a veteran. He's a young guy. And he still needs to be coached up. And you have a veteran quarterback, and that's kind of where he may be seeing a different shade of the team. You could talk to Eli and be like, Eli, we'll see you Monday on Thursday evening. We'll see you Sunday morning. And Eli will be there. You know Eli's going to go home and do some studying, and he'll be there bright and early. He's going to beat you to the stadium. Well, you tell a bunch of young guys that, they're thinking they got 3 days off. What can they? How much fun can they get mixed in 3 days? And that's not playoff or championship worthy attitude and bound, and improved it on the field. Obviously, going out on Sunday didn't impact you on the following Sunday, but your lack of preparation was impacted, and that impacts your performance on Sunday. Your favorite guy, best receiver in the league, I told you this kid was overrated a long time ago.
See, that's exactly what Eli was talking about. It's like, okay, you do something like that, then, you know, as if you already have enough of a bullseye on your chest, now you do this, and then you drop passes. It's like, Either be who you say you are, or don't, and don't do things that will just add to the situation, aggravate the impression that people have about you already.
Yeah. Well,
okay,
I mean,
but if you do that and don't perform, this is what will happen to you. And that's basically what Eli said.
Well, let's hope he learns his lessons, you know, for football fans' sake. So you won the week, man. Good job out of you. You had 4 out of 4 correct. I had 2 out of 4. You had 3 out of 3 of your picks against the spread correct. Good work out of you there. Yeah, that was a good week out of you, partner. That was a good job out of you.
And the comments are perfect as well, if I'm not mistaken.
The what?
The confidence picks were 100% as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, slow down there, fellow. We'll get there. And yes, you are correct.
Okay. Cool. Sorry. I don't want to leave the conversation.
I know you get excited. I mean, it doesn't happen that often where you dominate a week like that. So
I can understand the extra excitement there. So, good week out of you, sir. With everything, the trifecta there, you got it. Last week, did you learn anything from last week? I learned the Steelers and A-Rod, they're peaking right now. They're hot as can be. They're on fire. I already knew Matt Moore was a career backup, but I learned that Rawls has a chance to give the Seahawks some life for next week. I mean, if he can get 100 yards, that's going to be impressive. But 150 yards, I'm not asking for that type of production, duplication of the production from last week, but 100 yards, 100-yard gain, 110, 115, with about 20 carries so they can play ball control offense to keep Matt Ryan and that offense off the field, that's their strategy to win, not to go out there and, you know, the Seahawks fans get week after week after week, more roses and flowers come down, and it just blinds their objectivity, and it blinds the fact that they do not have a go-to guy on either side of the field. And so it makes it difficult for Russell Wilson to produce. I had a guy tell me the other day, he wished Russell would go back to the old style of play. I was like, what old-time play is that? What old-time play are you referring to, knowing that he's only been in the league 4 years? What old-style Russell are you referring to, sir? He says, well, the Russell where he runs. Well, I mean, dude, do you know what happened when he played the Miami Dolphins in game one, the first game of the year? Okay, you had Ndamukong Suh step on his heel, and surprisingly, he didn't come down with Achilles tear, rupture at that moment. He's been playing all season like that. So, of course, the game doesn't change. They don't have the same running back. They don't have the same offensive line. Yeah, 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 yeah. So we'll see what's going to happen, but I think Rawls actually gives the Seahawks life. That's one thing that I learned from last week. And yourself?
What I learned from last week is that the quarterback position is not overrated when it comes to winning playoff games. I also realized that a home game is monumental in what it is that you're able to do. And I also learned that you can't always assess what a team is going to do based upon what it is that certain players have done in the past. Best example would be Brock Osweiler. I heard so many people. I heard Hall of Fame potential quarterback Donovan McNabb backing Connor Cook. I heard the His and Hers show talking about what we know about Brock Osweiler versus what we don't know about Connor Cook. The only person that I heard that was completely objective about and really nervous for the young man about what was going to happen in this game was Teddy Bruschi. And he basically said, Connor Cook is going to fail because you just can't make adjustments on the fly in one game. But this, against the number one defense in the league. So what I learned is that home field advantage is critical. All the home teams won. And that the teams that were hot continue to stay hot. The teams that were kind of lukewarm kind of stay in that same mantra, and the hot teams being Green Bay and Pittsburgh. So you have some things to deal with when you face those guys if they're on their game. Now, if they're not on their game because both of those teams have weaknesses, then you may see something completely, totally different because now they're facing opponents that are, you know, at least by the rankings, at least by the seeding, superior. So, and you're on the road. So we'll see what you can do. But home cooking is good, and getting the best out of your players is, you know, crucial. Your star players, I would add.
Sure. Sure, all players. I mean, yeah, all players. We definitely would like to have our quarterback and go down swinging with the guy who's been there all year. So it having somebody in there new does make a difference.
this week coming up, I'm gonna get some, I'm gonna alter the script a little bit. I'm gonna get to something here after we review what the upcoming game for this week. So 11-5 and 1 Seahawks travel to the 11-5 Atlanta Falcons. I have Atlanta winning that game at home. I think it'd be like a 6-point game. So I think that Atlanta plus -5.5 is pretty adequate. Thinking maybe 24-17, something like that there. And then I got the Patriots wiping the floor with the Houston Texans on Saturday. What about you? Who you got? That 15 might not be enough there.
Similar picks. I do have the Patriots winning that game. When Houston went to New England earlier, I thought that the Romeo Crennel, Bill O'Brien factor would be more positive than it was. It made absolutely no difference that those guys would be coaching under Bill Belichick. They couldn't anticipate the plays, and it made no difference. I mean, Romeo is by far Bill Belichick's best defensive coordinator ever. So, I mean, if they has got 5 Super Bowl rings, and now he's coming in with a number one defense. But I don't think it's going to make any difference because I don't think Brock Osweiler is good enough to hold up to the pressure of what it takes to win in New England. So I think that's kind of going to be a blowout. I don't know if it's going to be 15 points. It certainly could be. I wouldn't be surprised if it was something like 27-10. So that's certainly a possibility. The other game, it all depends on what the Seahawks can establish per their running game. I was pleasantly surprised that they were able to get some double teams against the Detroit Lions and push some players around and let Thomas Rawls get a few more holes.
The Atlanta defense is not
that great. Vic Beasley's had a good year, but the question is, can the Seahawks score 30 points? I think they need to be able to score at least 30 points to beat the Falcons.
And the question is, can the Seahawks score 30 points? And because you think they need to score 30 points? And the answer is?
I am not sold. I'm 50-50 on it. It's a coin flip. For me, it always depends on how much they focus on Jimmy Graham. If they let Jimmy Graham do what Jimmy Graham does, they have a much better chance of getting to that 30 points. If they are just trying to get to Baldwin and Richardson and Curse and maybe CJ Procise is healthy, that's not enough of an offense to score 30 points. Especially the way House has been kicking extra points and field goals lately. I mean, you know, I think the third or fourth most accurate kicker in the history of football is suddenly not been able to find the range, which is weird. Eighth?
Matt Walsh fell off last season. This year, the season, how's it going? I mean, it goes, man. Matt Walsh was for Minnesota, he was one of the most accurate ever.
Accurate kickers, right, yeah. I mean, you know, I saw it happen to Vanderjagt. Like you said, when it goes. And, you know, I'm hoping it hasn't gone for Hauschka, but when the score was 19-6 and he missed that extra point, it was just like, oh, my God, man. What is going on with this dude? You're not getting Taylor money from Tucker money from Baltimore. You're not getting Justin Tucker money, man. You're not that good. I'm not trying to hear it right now.
So I think the biggest game of the week, the best game of the weekend, is going to be the Steelers going to Kansas City to play the Chiefs. Steelers 12-5, the Chiefs are 12-4. Kansas City is favored by 1.5, and I think they're going to need that 1.5 and another 1.5 to complete the victory against the Steelers. It'll be a 3-point game, 27-24, 24-21, something like that. What say you about Pittsburgh versus the Kansas City Chiefs?
I say Pittsburgh gets that one just because they'll be able to establish the run game, and Ben Roethlisberger's got Antonio Brown to throw to. But for me, the biggest game is, without question, the Cowboys and the Packers. I mean, that's Aaron Rodgers at his best on that big stage, and that's Dak Prescott having to deal with the fact that ownership has never really supported him the entire year, and if anything goes wrong, it will be Dak Prescott's fault, even if they don't win. I watched Alabama and Clemson on Monday, and everybody was trying to blame Sark. The offensive coordinator stepped in, but they scored 31 points, and they lost their starting running back. So it's like, okay, well, if they scored over 30 points and they left their starting running back, how is that the offensive coordinator's fault? Same thing will happen in Dallas. I mean, if they don't score enough points, but Ezekiel Elliott gets held at 62 yards, I mean, is that Dak Prescott's fault? If they lose for any reason, if they lose 41-38, it will be Dak Prescott's fault. Because of the way the ownership has set it up for, we're not sure who we should even be starting, even though they're 13-3, and they completely just blew off that last game, so they could even be 14-2. So right, it's like, okay, right. Well, so there's really nothing he can do to appease the ownership, because there will always be someone behind him, you know, over his shoulder, like, okay, well, they would have started Tony. Well, maybe they would have made this throw. They would have started Tony, and then they bring him in. He throws the touchdown in Philadelphia, and everybody goes crazy. It's like, okay, man, what can right. I do? This is why I respect so much what Pete Carroll did with Russell Wilson, naming him the starting quarterback, and never, ever, ever, ever letting anybody look over his shoulder. If you do what you were supposed to be doing, you're my starting quarterback. That's Prescott. And almost like a Pro Bowl almost year has never gotten that. Never.
Well, he got it from the coach, just not the owner. The coach is probably just saying ignore the guy, period, and let's move on from there. So he doesn't have to explain week after week, explain, defend his position, because he had to make it clear to him. And then after 6-7 weeks, he produced him. He's like, come on, I got this. At the end of the list here, if you were able to see the season recap, how many weekly picks we have won, how many against the spread, how many confidence picks we won, how many winning weeks, and the winning weeks would have been a combination of all of them, 3 out of 3. Or 3 out of 3. And then I did a combination. Can you see that?
I cannot see that. How did we do?
That's if you scroll down on the script, you can see it. It's at the very end of the script. It just kind of breaks it down, individual wins between you and I. I wanted to actually bring up a topic that we kind of touched base on, or you chimed in, but we don't have enough time to really do it justice. And that topic was LaDainian Tomlinson versus Terrell Davis. As a Hall of Fame running back,
you're saying
TD does not deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, I think by me even mentioning your stance, I think I just lost some. You just lost some listeners and fans. I think that's what just happened.
Okay,
I think,
okay,
I,
okay.
I think
well,
I heard
yeah.
I think I heard some
oh
people
coming
up right now because
we definitely need at least no less. Than 5 minutes to get into that one. But I will say it again.
Yeah.
Terrell Davis had a great 3-year run.
A better three-year run than any running back.
He went back-to-back Super Bowls. He rushed for 1,000 yards. I think he might have even scored 20-plus rushing touchdowns. But I don't think he even has 8,000 rushing yards through his career.
It doesn't matter. 2 Super Bowls.
Doesn't matter. Okay, see, you see how you already started? And then you want to compare him to LT, who's got like almost 13,000 restaurants? Almost twice as many?
What did he do?
They didn't win the playoff game, but yes, they did get to the playoff game.
Sean Alexander, I think
he scored 28 touchdowns on you.
Sean Alexander accomplished more than LaDainian Tomlinson. At least he took a team to the Super Bowl for the first time ever. LT didn't do that. LT couldn't do that. LT.
But why does that make him not a Hall of Famer? How many playoff games did OJ Simpson go to?
Hollow.
He's one of the top five running backs in the history. How many playoff games until his last 2 years did Walter Payton go to? How many playoff games did Barry Sanders won?
Hollow stats.
So you're talking to me then about Terrell Davis with two good years?
Two exceptional years.
He doesn't even have as many yards in a single season as Jamal Lewis. Is Jamal Lewis in the Hall of Fame? And he's got a Super Bowl ring. Jamal Lewis ran for more yards than Terrell Davis in a season. And won a Super Bowl.
Jamal Lewis goes into the Hall of Fame in my books before LaDainian Tomlinson.
Oh, see, come on, that's just blasphemous, man. What's with LT, man? Is this the Chargers thing? That's crazy.
He did nothing when it counted. Nothing. Zero. When it counted, he was not there. When the team needed him, he was standing on the sideline with his coat and a face mask, not moving, looking like Darth Vader. He was not there when it counted. Not there at all. Period. End of story. If you're not there when it counts, everything else you did is meaningless. Absolutely meaningless. If you're not there when
he can only do what he can do when it counts, and when he's there, he does what he can do.
They were 14-2, and what did he do in the playoffs? I think he had 30 yards in the playoffs. Zip. They did nothing, and it wasn't.
So his whole career, his whole body of work comes down to one game that he was not dominant in.
It comes down to that. That is a highlight. But it comes down to multiple games.
I think John Elway was the quarterback when Terrell Davis went to the Super Bowl back-to-back. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, man. Come on, Cleveland. I don't think John Elway.
I'm just saying.
I don't think John Elway performed better than Peyton Manning did when he won the Super Bowl the last time.
Because by your logic, I mean, I think Clinton Porter should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, did you get pretty much the same thing behind the vaunted Broncos offensive line?
Clinton Porter,
isn't that why he ended up in Washington? Because he was running for so many yards, they knew they couldn't really actually pay him to do that. And you can even listen to Mark Schlereth, one of the offensive linemen on that team, and he'll tell you that was a mistake. Because it's about 400 or 500 yards a season that you're losing just trying to plug somebody into this system. Terrell Davis had three really, really good years. I mean, three great years.
Oh, my goodness.
But does three great years make you a Hall of Famer?
The exceptions, he's the only one I've seen that deserves an exception. The only one. The only one that
I've ever seen that deserved an exception was Gale Sayers. I don't think that Terrell Davis deserved an exception.
I didn't see Gale Sayers.
I don't think he's rushed for 8,000 yards, dude. Has he rushed for 8,000 yards?
Don't give me no stats. Don't give me the stats. The stats aren't there.
Just give me those three seasons of greatness.
He was not only the NFL MVP, he was a Super Bowl MVP 2 years in a row. You can't take 2 years in a row. That means he performed.
That means he had two fantastic seasons as a running back.
And
Kenny Smith won the Super Bowl MVP. Kenny Smith is a Super Bowl MVP. He's one short of Terrell Davis.
He didn't win it back to back years.
He's one short of Terrell Davis. Yeah, but he won one.
Right. And he's a 2,000-yard season short of Terrell Davis as well. Okay, there's a Terrell Davis.
And we already said Jamal Lewis had one of those too.
Okay, and I said Jamal gets a golden jacket ahead of your guy.
Oh,
He gets a golden jacket ahead of your guy.
Okay.
If you're just I don't know what's going on here.
What's going on here is that Terrell Davis has not had enough seasons of being great and enough great moments other than 2 Super Bowls. That's not enough to make you a Hall of Famer.
That's not enough.
Why is he not in there? How long has he been out of football? He's not even close to being a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I don't know why he's not in there. You're like
personal debate, but I mean, nobody is seeing that.
You got him
in with a gold jacket already measured up. I mean, nobody's even got him on the ballot.
Yeah. Well, I know LT ain't getting in there. I know that. Or he don't deserve to get
in
there.
Bet LT gets in there. If not first ballot, he'll get in next year.
Oh, man. He's behind Sean Alexander, man. Sean Alexander had a better career than LT. Better. I say better. He led the team to a Super Bowl.
Sean Alexander is one of the most underrated running backs in the history of the league, and the only reason that he's underrated is because he always made a business decision outside the 30-yard line.
Well, yeah.
I never had a problem with Sean Alexander's running style. Now, other people, they want you to jump in and just take a bunch of, you know, be Eddie George battering ram, and he just was like, hey, dude, whoa, that play didn't work. Let me fall down. Or let me line it down. It's like, okay, let's do it again. Because the way we lined it up, it didn't work. So what is it I'm going to do to make this work?
He wasn't always that way. That was his last few years. He wasn't always that way though.
Yeah. Sean Alexander, inside the 30-yard line in the red zone, you've never seen a better running back than. He's good from the team's twenty to the 40, and then he's good from the 30 to the end zone. There is a section of the field where he's not that dominant, man. He's not getting like 5 tough yards. I mean, it's not Jerome Bettis, man. But he's behind Walter Jones and Steve Hutchinson in better believe, man. Those two, the most devastating football play that I've seen in quite some time in the last 20 years is Sean Alexander left. With Walter Jones at left tackle and Steve Hutchinson at left guard, there is no stopping.
That left line got him MVP.
Sean Alexander left 28 touchdowns, 1,880 yards.
That's what I'm saying. He had a better career than your guy LT, Sean Alexander.
LT had 14, 15, 16, like for 10 years straight. I mean, come on. Look at my
again. I'm not looking nothing up. Again, I want to know how many playoff wins did he have. That's what I want to know.
You can't do that in football. Football is not a come down to always just playoff wins, man. Because otherwise, Barry Sanders is not in the Hall of Fame. I mean, he had one playoff win.
He's not. Who's Hall of Fame? Who would take Barry Sanders out of the Hall of Fame? I mean, he needs to come down to the eye test. So.
According to your theory, it's all based on playoff wins. He's got one playoff win. One.
All right.
All those 2,000-yard seasons, all that juking and shaking, how many playoff games did he win? One. Ever.
Barry.
How many wins? How many playoff wins does Thurman Thomas have? Like 20. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Are we comparing the two?
I mean, who you want to compare LT to? Barry Sanders or Thurman Thomas? Who you want to compare him to? He doesn't compare to either one of them. He doesn't compare to either one. But let's try it. Who do you want to compare him to?
I would compare him to O.J. Simpson myself personally.
Oh, listen to you. I mean, what the LT, did he bring you?
How many playoff winners does O.J. Simpson
have? Did LT buy you a bike for Christmas or something? Did LT buy you a bike for Christmas? I mean.
Nope, but he had like 10 straight seasons of like 1,200 yards. And I think that Terrell Davis had like three.
Oh my goodness gracious! This guy.
We get back into it. I mean, we can you know recalibrate and get back into it. But man, come on.
Priest Holmes was
dope for three seasons, man. Super dope. I said Priest Holmes was dope for three seasons. Super dope, man. I think he had
okay.
Touchdown.
Okay.
I'm glad you brought Priest Holmes up. I'm glad you brought him up. I'm really glad you brought him up. Who did Priest Holmes? Where did Priest Holmes start at?
He started at Texas. He sat behind Ricky Williams. He never saw the field. Then he went to Baltimore. He sat behind Jamal Lewis.
He never saw the field.
So then he finally got his chance in Kansas City, and he killed it.
Who was the coach in Kansas City?
Dick Vermeil.
Not Vermeil. It wasn't Vermeil. It was Schottenheimer. He had Schottenheimer in Kansas City. Schottenheimer bit him
sure,
in the ball.
Man.
I'm positive. He had Schottenheimer in Kansas City. Bet on the ball. But you forget, he had a couple good games in college. Just the peak.
He had no good games in college because he sat behind Ricky Williams. He never played.
He sat behind Ricky Williams
and did not play ever. And then he went to Baltimore and sat behind Jamal Lewis and
he didn't play ever. You're right about that. But it was a Thanksgiving day game, man. He had like 250 yards on somebody. I don't recall who it was. He had like 250 yards.
Okay. So they always knew he was raw if he ever got his chance, and he finally got
right,
his
exactly.
chance.
Exactly.
So he killed it for 3 years, and that happens with running backs. They can kill it for 3 years. That does not make you a Hall of Famer.
Then he had a severe injury. Then he had a severe injury. But
isn't that what happened to Terrell Davis? He had a severe injury?
Listen. In Kansas City, I don't remember Kansas City going to Priest Holmes was a hell of a back. I don't remember him going to the Super Bowl 2 years in a row. I don't recall that.
You don't recall that? I don't think he had John Elway as the quarterback.
John Elway was done.
I think that's part of it.
John Elway wasn't who he was.
This wasn't 83. But don't act like he wasn't like still a great player.
The defense still wasn't good. Look, Elway was done. It was Terrell Davis's squad. Who don't you listen to? Anybody would tell you that was Terrell Davis' squad, the first Super Bowl and Super Bowl II. John Elway was like, shit, I got Terrell Davis. I got the league's MVP in the backfield. I can hand it off to him for another year and make the out route. Come on, Elway was done. That hit that he got when he tried to run to the end zone and got helicoptered. That's because his ass was slow. Them defenders came from the other side of the field to pop his ass. He took 30 steps.
But here's what I'm saying. Here's what I'm saying. Terrell Davis is not running for 2,000 yards if Matt Moore is behind center. You know what I'm saying? He did have John Elway behind center. He did have Easy Ed on one side. He did have Rod Smith on the other side. He did have Shannon Sharp.
You're really demanding Terrell Davis. Clayvon, I'm going to let you go. We're going to continue this conversation. I cannot believe I'm here.
He's not a Hall of Famer, man. I love the dude. Great announcer on NFL Network. A great three-year period. Like one of the best three-year periods in the history of football, man. That does not make you a Hall of Famer. A Hall of Famer is your entire body of work, your entire career, and you got to give me at least 10,000 yards to be in the conversation at running back. How many running backs? Ricky Waters is not in the Hall of Fame. He's got like 5,000 more yards than Terrell Davis.
Get your face out of the stat book. Get out of the stat book. Get out
of the stat book. Ricky Waters has a Super Bowl week. He had a Super Bowl week. He played with three different teams and rushed for more than 1,200 yards.
Is Ricky Waters a better running back than Terrell Davis was at the height of their career?
Oh, man. You know, for the entire body of his career, yeah. For that 3 years that Terrell Davis is on fire? Probably not. You get Terrell Davis the best 3 year span in the history of football.
Here you go.
The best 3 year period in the history of football, running the football. But it's 3 years.
You're stuck on that
it's
3 years.
3 years. What?
You're stuck on the. How many running backs? If you just want to talk about this, if you want to focus on the 3 years, how many running backs have better production in 3 years than Terrell Davis?
Eric Dickerson.
There you go.
I think Earl Campbell probably for over a 3 year period. Jim Brown over a 3 year period. I'm not sure what Barry's numbers look like. But Thurman Thomas did go to four consecutive Super Bowls and catches the ball way better than Terrell Davis. I don't know if Adrian Peterson has 3 years consecutively the same way that Terrell Davis has them. But I'm sure if you take Adrian Peterson's best 3 years, they're comparable. We're talking about toting the rock, man. You got to be that dude. Emmitt Smith, man. I mean, you got to be that dude for more than 3 years.
You're mentioning guys who deservedly so are in the Hall of Fame. The only reason Terrell Davis is
I'm not sure Edgerrin James doesn't have those same numbers, bro. To be quite honest with you. And nobody ever talks about Edgerrin getting to the Hall of Fame.
Okay. Numbers, you keep going back to numbers.
You keep going back to these 3 years that Terrell Davis was dope. What about those other years? Was he dope? Was he Hall of Fame dope?
In those 3 years, yes. Yes.
In those it 3 years. I'm talking about it. Was he dope?
His career was cut short due to injury.
Oh, okay. So now you're coming back to the Gale Sayers side of things. Gale Sayers is the only dude that gets that pass.
Terrell's number two.
Terrell's the second. Oh my God. And so Terrell is Gale Sayers good. Okay.
Terrell's number two. I mean, dude, he won two bowls back to back. I can't say single handedly, but he was the main cog in winning two Super Bowls back to back seasons. That included a 2,000 yard season. Why aren't you seeing this? I don't understand.
Because it's not enough of a body of work to say that. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying those two years weren't dope. You're saying that the only other person in the Hall of Fame that gives you a frame of reference to even mention his name is Gale Sayers. And you already said in your own words, he's not Gale Sayers. So why give it to him?
He's not
the Kansas Comet. Why give it to him?
In his time of when he performed, at the time he performed, there was nobody who performed better, period. That's why. 3 years he performed, there was not a better, there was no argument of who the best running back in the game was. There was no
argument.
You
could say that about a lot of running backs for a three-year period. That is not a long enough time to get you into the Hall of Fame. 3 years in a row does not get it done.
We're going to have to revisit this conversation next week. We're going to have to revisit. And I'm going to bring some stats to you and some comparisons.
Oh, man. I'm going to bring some stats to you. If you really want to get to the Terrell Davis thing, man, and really hammer this out, man, let me know. Send me an email. Send me a text, and we will hammer this out. Because this is ridiculous, man. This is a ridiculous conversation. It's just ridiculous. I mean, he never even caught the ball out of the backfield. He always ran the ball. So you can't even compare guys like Thurman, Marshall Faulk. I mean, those guys, I mean, they're already like three levels above him.
I mean, Terrell might be with his lack of years.
I want you to do your homework. You will not give me more than four seasons where he rushed for more than 1,200 yards.
With his lack of years of production.
Give me that three-period window because his first two seasons won't be great and his last two seasons won't be great because he was hurt. Just give me that three-year window and you'll tell me how dope he was. That's not what a Hall of Famer is about.
That's like telling me
some receiver had 120 passes like three seasons in a row, but his other seasons were like
60, 75. I'm not telling you Andre Rison deserves to go on the Hall of Fame. I'm not telling you that. I'm telling you a guy who was a major catalyst for a Super Bowl winning team 2 years in a row. You say, well, he had John Elway as a quarterback.
Is Marshall Faulk a Hall of Famer? Is Marshawn Lynch a Hall of Famer?
No,
he's not a Hall of Famer.
No,
he's not a Hall of Famer for his ballot.
Why not a Hall of Famer?
Because his body of work is not that complete. He's got a 4-year window where he was dope, and that's not enough.
He had a 4-year window.
He had a 4-year window.
Oh, so you didn't know who Marshawn Lynch was.
Yeah, a 4-year window.
You didn't know who he was until he put his Seahawks uniform on. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, no. Yeah, no, I know exactly who he was before he put on Seahawks uniform. Not a Hall of Famer. Not even in the conversation. Not even fucking close to being in the conversation. He was in Buffalo beating people up, hating being in the cold, hating being in North New York, and finally came out and did great things.
So I don't know what a Super Bowl means to you. Then a Super Bowl doesn't mean anything to you. Marshawn Lynch
A Super Bowl does not put you in the Hall of Fame. Wouldn't Timmy Smith be in the Hall of Fame? I think he has the most yards in the Super Bowl game ever.
So that was one day. Nobody knew who he was that morning before the Super Bowl. That was one day. That was a big performance one day. That's it. One day.
I think O.J. Anderson would be in the Super Bowl, you know, given your criteria. I mean, the Super Bowl is the Super Bowl, man.
Yeah, what are you talking about? When a guy carries his team from August to February through the NFL, and he is the main catalyst, a la Marshawn Lynch,
the main guy, the one, the team. When teams, when the teams do on a scouting report, who do we have to stop? And it's his name. That's a prime time performer. When he does it, most, when he does it and carries the team to a Super Bowl W. I mean, that's without a doubt.
Is Corey Dillon a Hall of Famer?
Who?
Is Corey Dillon a Hall of Famer?
No, he's not a Hall of Famer. No.
Is, because he has way more fucking yards than Terrell Davis.
He's not a Hall of Famer.
Jamal Anderson. Is Jamal Anderson a Hall of Famer?
Jamal Anderson.
League MVP. Rushed for 2,000 yards, took his team to the Super Bowl. Is he a Hall of Famer?
He has to wait. He, like I said, he gets in before Terrell.
Jamal's
got to
wait. Okay, is OJ Anderson a Hall of Famer? I mean, you know, took his team to a Super Bowl.
He wasn't the main. Come on, man! You're trying to poke holes.
Rush for over 10,000 yards with the Cardinals, and then went to the Giants and, you know, won a Super Bowl.
Okay, but see, so if you're just looking at numbers, here's something you don't understand when you just look at numbers.
I'm not just looking at numbers. I'm looking at a body of work. You're looking at these 3 years. You're looking at this 98 to 2000, like it's a 10-year career. It's a 3-year span.
Those 3 years were better than anybody's three. I asked you earlier. Tell me who had a better 3-year run than he did. You gave me two names. You gave me two.
Okay.
You gave me two. There's only two guys, so all you gotta do is
get down for 3 years and you're in the Hall of Fame.
No, that's not what I'm saying. When the guy is injured, he's getting an injury exception.
That's part of the game. You can't throw an injury. What could have been? What should have been? You can't throw that in. They only threw that in one time, and it was for Gale Sayers, man.
And
it could
be thrown in for Terrell Davis.
You're saying two times because it's Terrell Davis and he was dopey.
Terrell Davis. Exactly.
They realized error in their way when they did it that time. I got a number 40 hanging in my closet right fucking now. They probably shouldn't have done it then.
He's only at 6,000 yards.
He's only at like 6,000 rushing yards.
But again,
he's in the Hall of Fame because
you're looking at what could have been. You're looking at like 6,000. This dude has 12,000. There's guys who have doubled what he does. You're right. That's true. There's guys who have doubled his performance. Yes. Guys have way more yards than him. Yes. Corey Dillon, way more yards. Yes. Way more touchdowns, blah, blah, blah. Did he mean what Terrell Davis meant to his Super Bowl winning team? Did any of those guys mean what they mean to this team? The answer is no. The answer is no. Get out the
staff. But why is that put him in the Hall of Fame, though? That means that he had a really good career. I am on the fence, and this part may like make it even more telling. I'm on the fence about Kurt Warner, man. He's played in three Super Bowls.
I mean, come on.
So the three Super Bowls kind of almost get you in there. He won one. Is he a Hall of Fame quarterback, man? Is he one of the best slingers that ever did it in the Hall of Fame? Do you put a gold jacket on that dude, or you just say, man, when he was in his prime, when he was slinging, he was dope. He might have been the best when he was doing it.
The greatest show on turf, man. He was the one passing the ball.
He was the one passing the ball.
The Hall of Famer. Can he be a Hall of Famer?
Always.
Can he be a Hall of Famer?
He took Arizona to the Super Bowl.
Come on, Arizona. You can't even answer that question because the answer is no. And if you answer no, then it makes your Terrell Davis argument like moot point. You know he's not a Hall of Famer. You know in your heart he had like, dude, when he was racial on turf for those two or three seasons, that shit was dope. And then he came back in Arizona and had one good year, and that shit was dope.
Here's the difference. So you want to narrow it down to these three seasons, a year and a half in the front end, a year and a half at the back end. But he played all the time in the middle. He went to New York. He played for the Giants. He played those other years.
Was he playing Hall of Fame caliber football? Would you put him in the same breath with Drew Brees, for example? I'm just saying, Drew Brees has the same as many Super Bowl wins as Kurt Warner, and has played in one less Super Bowl. I say two less Super Bowls. Who are you talking about? Who's the first ballot Hall of Famer? The guy that went to three Super Bowls, that was 1-2, or the guy that went to one Super Bowl as 1-0, and will probably be top three all time ever in every category.
I mean, your comparison is not wrong, is not fair.
We're talking about a 3 year period of time.
No. See, you're talking about a 3 year period for one guy. Then you want to talk about a 3 year period for another guy, and then you want to compare a whole career to another guy. You can't take this period, and just keep in mind, I'm saying he deserves the exception.
There are cats. I'm gonna say it just like this, man. There are cats that can tear the NFL up for 3 to 4 years. That does not make them a Hall of Famer. Even if they tear it up to the extent that they win Super Bowls and they rush for 2,000 yards, it's 3 years. You only played 7 years.
Listen, you're minimizing.
4 years old, man. Jerome 38 years old, man. He played 7 years. He retired before he was 30 years old.
You're minimizing
Eddie George. He was doing a fucking Super Bowl. Won the fucking.
Was he MVP?
Eddie George had a better career, a better body of work, a better all around career than Terrell Davis.
You're losing it, man. You're minimizing the Super Bowl win. You're not taking account of the Super Bowl. That's what you're not doing.
You're giving Super Bowl wins too much credit, because then people that win Super Bowls, I mean, Larry Brown won Super Bowl MVP. How'd that career go?
Again,
Matthew Smith won Super Bowl MVP. I mean, how'd
that
go?
Are you comparing these guys to Terrell Davis? Just because they won a Super Bowl MVP,
the fact that they won Super Bowl MVPs, yeah, because you're giving so much credence to this one game
that somebody may have
gotten off or may not have gotten off. And I bet if you go, because I'm waiting for next week, I bet if you look at Terrell Davis' Super Bowl numbers, they're not that impressive. I bet they're not.
I'm going to talk to you. We're talking next week. I'm going to let you go. We're talking next week, all right?
All right, man, get ready, man, because I'm going to get real ready for this one, man. I don't understand where you're coming from, man. I really honestly don't. You're coming from these 3 years, and two of them they won the Super Bowl, so that makes him that dude for, like, his entire career?
If his career is only that, that is the only thing we have to talk about.
His career is only that.
If it's, it's only not that, even that we're like, talking about,
it's
yeah.
not even like yeah. 8,000 yards. Who else is in the Hall of Fame with 8,000 rushing yards?
That's how bad he was. That's how bad he was.
Okay. Okay. All right, man. It'll be Terrell versus Gale Sayers next week. Yeah, we'll do it.
All right, man. Later.
All right, player. Peace.